Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
Is Mike Costantino.
And what are we going to be discussing today?
You know, it is so much. Here we are, a Democratic perspective. We have a political 45-minute show every Monday morning. And there is, because of the political times, there is so much. And then we mix in things. And then we have these American tragedies that are happening so often that it just boggles the mind. Anybody even where we are in this business, we're almost at a loss for words. And that, yeah. So I'm talking about the shootings, of course.
Yeah, there's two mass shootings this week, folks. If you're listening to the podcast at some later time, two massive shootings, one in El Paso, one in Dayton, Ohio. A whole lot of people are dead. We want to discuss the prospects and policies for the Democratic Party, but we have to take some time, Ike, and just the amount of gun violence and stuff, and even Trump has kind of denounced white supremacy.
Our senator from Arizona said it's too soon. Cinema, you're wrong. It's not too soon. These happen so often. We're talking about hundreds of mass shootings in the USA. So no, it's not too soon to talk about gun control. It's not too soon to talk about who can we blame? Is Trump to blame? There's lots of articles out there that say Trump is to blame. I tend to agree with them, Steve.
Yeah, I do too. And, this guy drove, 8 hours from Allen, Texas, down to El Paso, where he knew there were a lot of Hispanic people. I mean, El Paso is 80% Hispanic or Latino, and just so he could kill a lot of minority people who have lived in that part of Texas, God, you know, even before they drew the border. So, you can't think that this is not political, and he published a manifesto, which sounds like the manifesto in New Zealand, where the guy shot up and killed 50 people in two different mosques. And it all sounds like
it sounds
a
like
piece.
Donald Trump is what it sounds like.
Right.
The manifesto, his Facebook page is Trumpian from beginning to end.
It's like the guy thought that people would criticize Trump, and he said he had these ideas before Trump. Well, yeah, I mean, there's white racism before Trump. Trump's used it to keep political power. I mean, I think that's the fundamental issue. The fundamental issue is whether we're divided off on how the Americans divide off. Is it a matter of white against all the minorities, which is what you get from the white nationalists? They can't identify with anybody who is not white, and what white is varies, Mike, from.
Well, that's it. See, I don't want to step over that. What you said is Trump can't keep political power without racially dividing America, without supporting white supremacy. So, first of all, we have a leader that counts on support for white supremacy to keep political power, and that means, by the way, that there's enough people to support. Many Americans get up every morning and don't believe we're a racist nation. They don't believe that 40% of the country, or 37%, whatever it is, according to him, it's 50% of the American people support a racist white supremacist in the White House. But evidence shows different.
I think that there's not. He's using, I don't know what's in the man's heart, if anything at all, but he's using racism, he's using xenophobia, he's using all kinds of racial things to keep in power. And he has to scare white people into that they're losing power and they're losing face. And, you know, the interesting thing, Mike, is that the people who are most worried about white folks losing power are people in the areas where they're not losing power, you know, where they're not dealing with actual minorities, you know. There's almost never been much racial tension along the border. You have this conflict. Have we got Gary calling in? Why don't we put Gary on and just say hello? We got to put our earphones on, folks. And,
good morning.
Morning, Gary.
Good
morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, all things considered. I'd just like to chime in on your previous conversation.
Go ahead.
Is there any difference between the GOP and white supremacists these days? I don't think so. I don't see any daylight at all.
I think there's a difference between the GOP and the idea of white supremacy. But I think that the GOP is increasingly narrow white-based party, and Trump particularly has stoked fears of the country beginning to look different. And every time we've had a high level of immigration, we've had know-nothings. And this anti-new immigrant stuff, for example, started when the English didn't like the Scots-Irish coming here, and then the Scots-Irish and the English didn't like, you know, the Germans, and then the Germans and the Scots-Irish and the English didn't like the Italians, and so forth and so on. Been going on forever. I was reading an interesting thing in Butte, Montana, and the Irish came over here. They speak English. And there were these bitter complaints in the newspapers that they were singing in their own language. So this kind of fear of the other, fear of people being different, just keeps changing partners, Gary, it seems to me.
Well, I wrote a piece on my blog that I think is pretty apropos, and that is the GOP used to claim that they were the party of financial responsibility, but with Trump's tax cuts and the dramatically increasing deficit and debt, that's no longer true.
Yeah,
they used to claim they were the party of family values, but given all of Trump's extramarital affairs and his treatment of young children at the border, that's no longer true. They used to claim that they were the party of patriotism and defense, but given his embrace of murderous dictators and his embrace of Russian interference, that's no longer true. They used to claim that they were the party of law and order, but given his obstruction of justice and his disdain for the FBI and the rule of law, that's no longer true. They used to be the party of free trade, but given his tariffs with China and his trade war, that's no longer true. They used to be the party that really cared about, you know, claimed to care about democracy, but they're suppressing votes, gerrymandering, and trying to bury opponents in an avalanche of dirty money. So that's not true. And they don't care about seniors because they want to cut Social Security, Medicare, safety net programs. So that's not true.
Yeah, Eisenhower said any candidate that cut Social Security would always lose.
It's stupid, I think he said.
And then they always claim to be, you know, the party of supporting veterans, but they want to cut veterans' benefits. Hmm. So what's left? The only thing left is white supremacy and racism.
Wow, that was a very
by the president.
So, that was a very good rant, Gary. That was a Mike Cosentino worthy rant. For sure.
Yeah, it was Mike level.
I'm really, truly just fed up. I don't give them any quarter whatsoever. There's not a single thing that party has been for that's been positive in the last, you know, 12 years.
Why don't you give the name and address of your blog, Gary, for folks who want to go and read your article?
It's lemasterscorner.com.
All right.
Lemasterscorner.com.
So
right.
we wanted to talk about this morning, Gary, about where the Democratic race was. We've still got 20 candidates. We've got these very substantive debates. I don't know how many people listen through the whole thing.
Yeah.
I got to admit that I don't. I turn them on and listen for a while, and then I read descriptions of them in some detail. So I'm sort of guilty too, but we have 20 candidates and there's a real debate going on. It's not always pleasant between progressives and more centralist figures. And the dividing point, as Mike was saying before the show, was really about Medicare for all or Medicare opt-in, right? That's the big debate. And there's no debate in the Democratic Party that everyone in the United States needs medical coverage.
Well, kind of our theme this morning was going to be two or three hot-button debates that seem to exist, Medicare, immigration. And the hot-button issues Steve would like to see exist. Steve and Mike would like to see the Democratic candidates talking about, like mass inequality. You have Steve's going to cover it in a little while, and I want to respond to that. So we have a list this morning. Just before I get to that, though, I do want to say Beto O'Rourke was at least the one candidate. Others may have, but he was the one candidate, at least right now, that's getting all the coverage that spoke out against Trump and the shootings that say, and he said, I'm going to quote here, that Trump sows this kind of fear, this kind of reaction we saw in El Paso yesterday. This is what Trump's his rhetoric is all about. So O'Rourke places the blame for this at the feet of this president.
And O'Rourke is really, in the context of the Democratic Party, sort of a moderate now, for example, arguing for opt-in Medicare coverage. In other words, that's called a public option. If you don't like your coverage in your private sector or you don't have coverage, you can opt in to Medicare. You'll have to pay a fee to I'm on Medicare and I pay a fee into Medicare. So it's not free, but it's an alternative. So that's been the really strong debate, the debate on immigration. What can we say? The whole country, except for the Native American folks, and they immigrated here 10,000 years ago, it's always been about immigration, movements of people, different nationalities, people with different languages. There have always been complaints that, you know, the Italians don't speak English and so forth and so on. It goes on and on and on. And we're now in a very high immigration period. So we have to be honest. I think it's the highest immigration period since 1910-20 period.
And then the Trump rally. How do we stop these people? Shoot them. And the crowd laughed. Mr. Trump smiled. And he said, that's only in the panhandle. You can get away with that stuff. This, I think, was the rallying. This is all that somebody who was already hateful, somebody who was already disturbed, needed to hear, was a Trump rally where that he got approval for shooting them. I'm going to point out, and I'm getting this out of Politico, I believe, that Mr. Trump embraced racist conspiracies for years. He was among the leading voices who pushed the birtherism lie that President Obama wasn't born in the United States. And since his and during his campaign for presidency, Mr. Trump has taken those views to the center of American politics. And I think that's another important phrase. Were all of these fringe things, okay, yeah, we knew there was some fringe racism, we knew the birthers were out there and they were sort of a side joke, a fill-in at the end of a news show. But he has brought this wacko stuff to the center. This is Oval Office stuff now. He denounces immigration. Every immigrant is a gang member and a rapist. He wants to send our American-born representatives back to the countries they came from. This is almost a daily
tirade, my tirade.
That we drag in immigration, anti-immigration of every stripe to the center of American politics, and that's another crime, as far as I'm concerned. That's a GOP, as Gary pointed out. And it's not just Trump. It is the permission from the GOP. Like he said, I like Gary's friend. I see no light between white supremacy and the American Republican Party.
They're basing their struggle to maintain power on fear. Fear of immigrants, fear of minorities, fear of strangers, fear of other countries except Russia. And, it goes on and on. And the problem, folks, is that fear works. A lot of times you can scare people into doing really, really bad things or really, really things that don't benefit them. The Democratic debate has been pretty extensive. I mean, it's hard to watch. I mean, I've tried, and there's like 10 guys there, and they have so little time to say anything, and they're all desperately trying to score points. I mean, I don't know how it goes. I mean, obviously, Elizabeth Warren has seemed stronger and stronger for progressive side.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then some of the centralists were kind of effective in asking questions about Medicare for All, and some of these there was some good questioning there by some of the representatives. I think Delaney is his name, and there's a focus on climate change, and there was talk about a lot of different things. I think what's underlying the problems, and Mike and I were talking about this before, is the kind of income inequality and the drop of power of the American workers and stuff. And so we have a little thing, and I think it's from the Times, but it just kind of gathers the stuff. Workers for decades have been losing out year after year of wage stagnation. Increased insecurity on the job, waves of downsizing, offshoring. The labor share of the national income has been declining to its lowest level in seven decades. I'm sorry.
Yes.
We're the only advanced country that doesn't guarantee maternity leave. We're the only advanced country that doesn't guarantee workers any vacation, that doesn't guarantee sick days. And so forth and so on. And it is an interesting statistic, folks. Among three dozen countries in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the United States has the lowest minimum wage as a percentage of the median income, just 34% of the typical wage compared to 62% in France and 54% in Britain. Now, that's a statistic, but what you feel on this is that you're not, if you're working, you're getting a less and less share of the national pie, and more money is going to the top 1%. I don't care that they have a lot of money, but I think this is a central issue, and I think it's causing the unrest. I think it allows Trump to people are unhappy because their wages have been stagnated for seven decades. I mean, come on.
Well, that's it. And these are the Democratic issues that I'd like to see addressed. Because every one of those things that you read, Steve, represent piles of human suffering, American human suffering. When you talk about wage stagnation, we're talking about families whose children can't have the same lives as their parents. When you talk about income inequality, we're talking about not being able to afford housing. When we're talking about corporate welfare, common sense, American common sense says no employer should be able to, no corporation, let's put that, no corporation, mom and pop radio stations will leave out of this, but no corporation should be able to pay such a low salary that you can't afford to live in the USA. At least something to be able to eat and have food and shelter. Fine, you can't buy new clothes at Chico's, no problem. But you should be able to feed yourself and have a place to live in the United States. And right now we're subsidizing Walmart, we're subsidizing Home Depot, we're subsidizing all of these places. I know that a $15 minimum wage people say, talk about job loss. Whatever adjustment period has to happen, the $15 minimum wage has to happen.
The economics are not there for these claims of massive job loss. So I think Mike and I, you know, have a lot of disagreements. We've been doing the show now for almost, 8 years? And, you know, we have different perspectives, and Gary has a different perspective, and everybody we have on has one. But I think that we agree that the core is what's silently happening to the American worker in terms of their wages and their benefits.
Exactly. And these are their jobs. You know, everybody talks about a hot economy. It's a hot economy if you're rich. if you're looking for a good paying job and you don't have a lot of education because you couldn't afford to pay your student loans if you did get an education, it's not a great economy.
We could talk about 1,000 different issues, folks. For example,
but this is what we want to see the Democrats talk about.
I was going to say about training workers in technical support and stuff. We leave everybody off on their own, and all the other countries, particularly Germany, has a really strong program of training people in technical stuff and mechanical and engineering and so forth and so on, so that there's the jobs and stuff. So there's a dozen different things that can be done, or even more. But this is kind of the central issue, and I think, as good as the Democratic debates have been, and also very, very frustrating to listen to, I can barely listen to them because they're so, you know, it's so, I don't like things broken down as just sort of
sound bites.
Yeah,
they're grabbing.
I'm not a sound bite guy.
Yeah, I hear you. You like the nuances. You're not a phrase guy. You want a whole paragraph.
And I'm not impressed with Kamala Harris's ambushing Joe Biden. I that kind of stuff doesn't impress me.
Yeah.
And I know that what's important is that Biden didn't handle it well. But for somebody to plot that against a fellow Democrat for 6 months, and it was a very sort of unfair attack. Lord, when Biden was in the Senate and stuff, those Southern guys dominated the whole thing. If you wanted to get anything done, you had to face that. I guess you could ignore them. A lot of liberals did, and Biden didn't. And you could argue about that. But he's not evil because he tried to do that. The next debates, Mike, are in September, and they're going to have more stringent.
But I want to talk about the split. The perceived split. I mean, go ahead and we'll talk about.
Right, let's just say the next debate, folks, for you to listen to, and there'll be there won't be 20 people, at least we hope, and it would cut down.
I sent $25 to Marianne Williamson, said, "Great job, get out of the race."
Yeah.
Please leave.
There's only 8 that have qualified so far for the next,
right,
the September debate, and which should make it a lot better if the networks allow people to finish a point. One of the things that's been disturbing is they've been so stringent about time, they won't even let them finish a sentence.
Right.
So it's
I know.
Interruption.
I'm afraid, though, that more people are going to qualify, Gary. I think the estimate is another 5 candidates may make the cut. And the cut is based on how many contributors you have. It's going to be September 12th and 13th. That will be the third debate. There's going to be a debate in October and November and December. And good, the Iowa caucuses start on February 3rd. So things are going to be rolling along, folks, pretty quickly.
Well, I want to talk about
right now you have Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke that have all qualified based on their polling and their financial support. I got to believe that Tom Steyer, the billionaire, is going to be able to buy enough attention to get on the stage.
I agree.
I would love to see Jay Inslee get on the stage because he's the most vocal about climate change, or actually climate crisis. It's no longer climate change. And then the other one I think would be fascinating to continue is Andrew Yang, because he's the only one who's really addressing the core issues of employment going forward in the future, because you know, nobody else is talking about what the AI or artificial intelligence and robotics is going to do to the future, and he's the only one that's addressing it head on. And of course, the Republicans have their heads stuck in the sand on it.
I'm glad that there's a lot of people running, a lot of different voices, but there are so many voices. I mean, 10 people in each debate that I don't think, Gary, it doesn't fill us out enough about the candidates. Most people I talk to that listen to the debates have still not decided who they're going to vote for. They don't know whether they'd go for a Joe Biden, for a centrist, or go for a progressive. A lot of people that I talk to are really undecided by these debates. So have to go on for us to get a clearer idea of the candidate's abilities.
But here's the problem.
Part of the reason for that, maybe the entire reason that people are undecided at this point, is I think the one candidate that is leading above all is anybody but Trump. I think that nobody, you know, it's like splitting hairs to pick one of the Democratic candidates. I think all of us will vote for whichever candidate wins, just to get that idiot out of office.
So the debate is whether you go for a progressive and you really try to get the fundamental change we need in the country. And we're talking about everything from the Electoral College, which has really got to go, and a restructuring so we have a fairer economy. We can't keep giving more and more percentage of the national wealth to fewer and fewer people. It's going to cause deep instability, and I would say even to conservatives, this is not the way to go. This is going to cause down the road and now massive problems.
I do like all the terms, and once again, looking at political, we talk about the wine track candidates. In the old days, like Jerry Brown and Gary Hart, and then the beer track candidates, whoever you may associate with the beer track. But the idea is this: winning on a political message, as certainly Elizabeth Warren has done very well with, but she's the only one. What happens in politics, and what I'm afraid is going to happen, and already happened a little bit, is people are going to say, I can't win on politics, I can't win I got to go for emotions. All of it, if you want to see those numbers really change on the undecideds that Steve was just talking about, then you're going to look for them to start going for the emotions in the next few debates, which would be really unfortunate for the Democratic Party to do, the Democratic candidates. But I think that's what's going to happen to sort themselves out.
I think, Mike, what do you think on this? I'm going to ask you a question. I think most Democrats really don't know what to do. They don't really know which way to go yet.
Well,
and
Gary's
the debates
right.
have given us a lot more information, but I think they haven't given us the information for people to decide we've got to go with Elizabeth Warren or Bernie, or we've got to go with Biden. I think people are still really undecided and just watching this process, and there's, what, four more debates each month.
Well, I believe Warren's approach is genius, and that is, because there are so many debates and because there is so much time, as you said, that nobody's gotten, but little by little, because she has all the policies, she has them all. So as people, you know, kind of reluctantly start to watch the debates or hear about the debates, Warren makes sense to them because she's got it all laid out. Everybody else responds to the issue of the moment. But I think Warren, she will really emerge strong because she's always been the policy person, and she really hasn't wavered from that.
And you have someone like O'Rourke, who's apparently incredible one-to-one and in small groups and in talking to people personally, who, when he's on a debate stage, is really not very good. He doesn't really – his positives don't come across. And I think that with all the candidates, there are these different abilities and I think different issues affect different people. But I also think that debates – encourage one person. Now, remember that any of the candidate that wins, Mike, the Democratic primary, is going to be in debates with one of the most unscrupulous demagogues in the world history, Donald Trump.
Right, and he always turns, and he always lies and turns, and he'll lie and lie and lie. And they must call. In fact, if you call out Donald Trump's lies in a debate, there will be little time for you to get their message. So believe me, they're already planning.
Or no time, Mike. No time.
Okay, I want to ask this of both of you: impeachment. I'm looking at an article this morning. Jerry Nadler said that on Monday, that's today, that his panel could recommend articles of impeachment by late fall, sketching a rough timeline for potential efforts to remove President Donald Trump just days after a majority of House Democrats signaled their willingness to support. So what's happened in the last few days? A majority of House Democrats have finally signed on for impeachment, and Jerry Nadler saying the Judiciary Committee may be working up articles of impeachment by the fall. Does impeachment change? What does impeachment change for a Democratic candidate?
I think the logic, Mike, is impeachment can't win in the Republican dominated Senate. It has no chance of Trump being removed. Zero chance of being removed by impeachment. But do you go? So then the question
is. That wasn't
is,
the question.
No, no, wait. So given that you can't actually get him out of office through this process.
Yeah.
Should you do it or not? That's the question, right? I mean, should we?
No, that's not the question.
The question is,
impeachment's going to happen. What does it mean for the candidates?
Well, the real question is rule of law. You know, I don't care what the politics of it are. And I never have. The guy colluded clearly. You know, he sought the help of the Russians. He reveled in the help of the Russians. He won largely because of the Russians, and then he obstructed every possible attempt to uncover what actually happened. A lot of his people on his campaign destroyed evidence. They lied repeatedly. He lied repeatedly, and he clearly obstructed justice, as stated by more than 1,000 former prosecutors. And so the point is, he broke the law, and he needs to be held accountable. If they don't convict him, you would not do that. You would not take into account the political considerations for anybody else.
I think, from my point of view, Gary,
he should be indicted.
Pretty much everybody who wants to know what Trump is already knows what he is, and what he's done is really clear. His supporters are one thing.
But
everybody
it's the
else
Democrats'
is something
job
else.
To impeach him.
Well,
that's what Gary is saying.
The Democrats' job is to come up with candidates and platforms that will actually help the American people.
I take it back. It's the House of Representatives' job, which is controlled by the Democrats.
Right. The Democrats really have to. It's time to come up with an explanation of what's going on in the country economically and what's going on when Trump does his anti-immigrant thing, and offer a positive vision of where America should go. That's what I think is the fundamental thing. So when I look at impeachment, I'm not sure how that I would spend the time on that. I think Democrats need to talk to people about the economic issues. They need to talk about the need for structural change in the United States, which is scary to some people. And they need to talk about a positive vision of America as opposed to this narrow-minded crap coming from Donald Trump.
And that would be fine if Trump would shut his mouth and just go about business. But we're talking about a guy that breaks the law nearly every day. And for the Democrats to turn a blind eye to that, as Gary said, is fundamentally wrong. Each day that goes by that Democrats don't try to do what they can, which is impeachment. That's all they can do. We don't have any other mechanism. They can't walk in and slap cuffs on them. They can't do that. I would like that. But they've got to do what they can.
Jerry Nadler is my old congressman when I lived in New York.
And he has to stop.
Bills that they've passed that sitting at Moscow Mitch's doorstep, that he refuses to bring up in the Senate. The House has passed bill after bill after bill. There are two bills that they passed on gun laws, on the registration, of gun, universal gun registration. And Mitch won't bring them up for a vote in the Senate. So they can do both. They've been doing both, and I think they'll continue to do both. To pass bills and try to change the country for the better, but at the same time, I think they can hold him accountable.
Yeah, Moscow Mitch has kind of got an interesting background with all these Russian oligarchs contributing to his campaign.
Moscow
millions
Mitch
and millions of dollars over the last 10 years.
How do you go from $2 million net worth to $28 million net worth without Russian oligarchs? He's a genius investor, or the tobacco crop was really good in Kentucky that year.
Yeah, yeah, maybe that's it.
Wife have also both parked their money offshore to avoid taxes. So, there's lots of ways that they've gamed the system, which is easy to do when you're the majority leader of the Senate.
Well, the thing is, if old Moscow Mitch doesn't like any of the Democratic proposals, why doesn't he come up with his own?
There you go.
And then if he doesn't want the Democrats to score a point by doing something good, then come up with some Republican alternative that actually does pretty much the same thing that he can put his stamp of approval on. Why block all what he's blocking, folks, is any effort to block Moscow from interfering in our election. This man is blocking action to block interference in American elections. Why is he doing it? Well, I understand I don't want to give the Democrats any victories, but come up with something else.
You know, one of the things that makes the big issues, the step backs, this is what Democratic perspective is supposed to be about. We're supposed to take the perspective. And so if I sit here and say, if Mike Cosentino sits here and says that the USA is over as a nation because we allow foreign governments, we have allowed, encouraged foreign governments to meddle in our elections, and we have allowed the foreign government to buy our voting machine company in Maryland. So at what point are we over as a nation? When the Russians own the voting machine companies, when the Russians are, when we have evidence from the FBI that they meddled in the election in every 50 states, not just the states that Trump won narrowly.
And that they're planning to do it again.
And they're planning to do it again, and Moscow Mitch won't stop them. What other conclusions are we supposed to draw? We're done.
I don't know, Mike. I mean, I think there's partisan politics can get pretty crazy, you know, and people can lose their perspective. But protecting our elections is something that, well, maybe
wouldn't you think
it worked well for the Republicans last time? Maybe they don't want to protect the election. I think they must.
Does power mean that much to them? They're willing to give away the basic electoral process just to hold on to power. And a lot of people know why. Political pundits know why. If you're a political science professor, you know, because they will never be in power again. They don't have the message. The message is Medicare for all. The message is guaranteed basic income. The message is health care, is child care. The message is maternity care. That's the message that wins in the United States today. Poll after poll after poll. The Republicans don't have that. They will never win another election unless they hold on the way they're holding on.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing if you really had perspective, Mike, to watch a party that's becoming more and more a minority in the United States. It's not about minority people coming in. They're becoming a tiny minority among young people, and that's the future. And their tenaciousness to holding on power in an unscrupulous way, the gerrymandering, the voter suppression, and letting foreigners interfere in our elections. I mean, they just are doing everything, Mike, that they can do to hang on. Well, I mean, say something about it.
Well, the three guys on this microphone think it's going to go back to the way it was. I got messages.
In what sense, Mike?
It's going to go back to that once the Democrats take over, we're all going to go back to the way it was, where, you know, kids are getting scholarships and we're going to school and you can fill out your FAFSA and get Pell grants and all of, you know, for education. Social Security is going to go up a little bit, so people don't have to live on $500 a month. It's not going to go back. Donald Trump, the genie out of the bottle, has changed the USA forever. He's dismantling the US government as we sit here. And nobody's going to be able to wave a magic wand in 2021 and put the USA back together. We're talking a generation before the USA gets put back together.
I think
if it gets put back together.
Yeah, particularly in foreign affairs. Mike, what if he wins and we have four more years of Trump? What do you think? I mean, I don't agree with you that what you said now is true, but four more years of him. And
you guys can't do this. You have to talk one at a time.
Go ahead, Gary.
It's for another country if he wins, because this one is over. There's no question. The big thing, the one thing I wanted to point out is there was a Facebook executive, former Facebook executive, that was being asked about the Russian interference in the coming election. And he said that they will do it in a very different way. And he predicts that what their goal will be is to create doubt in the outcome of the election, that whoever wins will feel like the election was stolen. And the fighting between the two sides will weaken and virtually destroy the country. And I think that's very likely.
Yeah, I don't have that apocalyptic version. I think we'll get through this. I think we'll defeat Trump. I think we'll get a decent candidate. I don't know whether it'll be a moderate Democrat or a progressive Democrat, but it'll certainly be better than what we've got. We'll get an honest guy or gal. We'll get an honest person as president of the United States, a decent person, a person with some sort of sense of morality. God knows that's a huge step now, Mike. I mean, just getting somebody who's not like him.
To tell the truth. The thing to look for is this. When the candidate becomes clear, look for the change of behavior, because they will be descended upon by every lobbyist. And
we wanted to say something about
yes.
John O'Donnell. A
All right. One of the supporters of the show. Has been John James O'Donnell, and he passed away about a week ago. We had a memorial. He taught at MGSU in high school for 30 years. He taught at Yavapai College for a while. He's on many boards and commissions everywhere. He served on many grand juries, state grand juries, I guess is supposed to be a secret, but county, he's done all sorts of things. He's been a real community-centered a man all his life. And when we did his memorial at the high school last week, there was 150 people there. It was quite a he's quite a loss to the community and to those of us who were close to him.
We should salute Mike for organizing the memorial. I hear that you did a really great yeah. job of doing that, Mike. And John was just a very generous and intelligent guy. And I don't have any more to say. He wouldn't want to hear this, right?
He would. No, well, the fight is between the supposed Democratic Party split between the progressives and the moderates. Steve is saying it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. That's why the debates, debates shamate, as long as it's not Trump, we're okay. And that is absolutely true. Now, in that, however, they can still lose. Please don't forget, folks, these shows, we got a lot of great interviews coming up, a lot of great candidates. Democratic Perspective has it going on. We want to make sure that you check out our shows on our website, vvid.org. Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org will have this show and all our shows. Please, we've already had a lot of great candidates on. We're going to continue to have a lot of great local, statewide, and federal candidates on Democratic Perspective. So please, please, please don't forget there is a donation button. It costs money to keep, this is America. KAZM doesn't do this out of the wonderful hearts that though they have wonderful hearts, they still have to pay the bills, and so do we. So please look for that donation button on vvid.org and listen to our old shows. You can find them various other places if you're really good around the internet sometimes. You can also listen to us. Don't forget, if no matter where you are in the world, you don't have a radio, that's fine. You can listen to us, KAZM 780 live streams all over the internet. You can listen to us in Borneo.
Podcasts everywhere, folks. We're worldwide podcast listenable.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.